Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, that's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, and you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGAN. And while you're there on Twitter, you can follow us there at GoForItGAN. Got a great big show for you today. NFL Draft is right around the corner, a few days away, and we're going to be joined by some NFL Draft prospects, University of Miami quarterback Ja'Cory Harris, UTEP cornerback Antoine Blake will join us. T.I. Hilton, Florida International wide receiver, and also running back for Colorado State, Raymond Carter, will be joining us as well. So we got four NFL draft picks that will be joining us. And we're also going to be joined by the great Willie Rofe, and he's going to give us his take on how it felt to be drafted and his mindset leading up to the NFL draft. So we're going to get his take on that. We're going to get his take on a few other things as well. Great show for you lined up. Should be a lot of fun. NFL draft around the corner, and somebody's about to be a millionaire and going to be famous, and the NFL draft is around the corner, and that's going to be an exciting time for those guys. And we're going to talk to a few of the guys who are preparing for this upcoming NFL draft. I want to start, and before I do that, Jeremy, how are you?
Never better, Paul, here in sunny Bluebell, PA, never better.
And never better is right. And me, on the other hand, I'm battling a cold, so I'm playing hurt right now. But, I'm a fighter. I play hurt. That's what I do, and I'm going to get it done. And speaking of hurt, Dwight Howard had surgery the other day, out for the year, herniated disc in his back. A big blow for the Orlando Magic. Do you hear it? Do you hear it? Do you hear those champagne bottles popping? That's the Indiana Pacers, because right now they are slated to play the Orlando Magic, in the first round of the playoffs. But guess what? Dwight Howard is not going to be there. So without Dwight Howard, it's a foregone conclusion that the Indiana Pacers will win that series. But let me caution you with this. I think the Orlando Magic are going to give the Indiana Pacers a series. I think they're going to give them a long and hard-fought series, but I don't think they'll have enough to win that particular series. But that's next week. That's next week, and NBA playoffs do get started next week. But for Dwight Howard, and there were reports before this that Dwight Howard had told ownership that he was not going to play again for Stan Van Gundy. I guess now with the surgery and everything, those reports are kind of moot in a lot of ways, because, and maybe, who knows, maybe Dwight still felt that way and still feels that way, but the reality is he's out for the year. He's done for the year, and the Orlando Magic, a team that, I don't think would have won an NBA, would have gotten to the NBA Finals or even won an NBA Final or won an NBA Championship, I should say, but I think this is a team that could have been a dangerous team, but now they're not as dangerous with Dwight Howard on the sidelines in a suit. And his big glasses, big black glasses, and the nerd look seems to be in now. And you see a lot of guys wearing the big glasses, and guys probably don't even need glasses. But that's another story for another time. But anyway, Dwight Howard is out for the year. His replacement, Glenn Big Baby Davis, will be starting in the middle. So any team that's playing the Magic in the playoffs, and that team is the Indiana Pacers. And again, the champagne bottles are flowing. The bubbly is everywhere, because Indiana is going to probably win a playoffs round. And that's going to be good for the Pacers. And that was a team I had early on in the season. a team that I felt was going to be a very good team during this season. And we're going to get to we're going to talk later about Paul Gant, the Nostradamus. Nostradamus, Paul Gant, and I got a little something special for you guys, and we're going to get to that later. But anyway, Dwight Howard is done for the year. Apparently, he should make a full recovery from this, and at this point, it's done. He's out for the year, and the Orlando Magic are a team. But I do think Stan Van Gundy and those boys will come together and at least be competitive during the playoff. Not going to win it, but I think they will be competitive. What do you think about this whole Dwight Howard thing at this point?
Well, I mean, you say they're going to be competitive, so you see that series, they're going to lose, what, 4-2?
I'm saying 4-2. No, I'm actually going to say 4-3. I think it's going to go 7, but I don't think the Magic will have enough.
You're crazy.
You'll see. Call me crazy. Call me whatever you want to, and I've been called worse. But the reality is I just think when that whole situation – When the playoffs get started, I think the Magic are going to come together. And it's happened. It's happened, and I think the Magic will come together, and I think they're going to be a tough out. And the Islanders going to win, but I think the Magic will be a tough out. But you look at this Dwight Howard thing, and it's just, you know, it's one thing after another. It's been one thing after another with him. And the thing about it, also with this strike-shortened season and the compressed schedule that we've had, you should expect these type of things to happen. Injuries are going to be a big part of the game. Look at Derrick Rose in the Chicago Bulls. Derrick Rose has missed a bunch of games for the Chicago Bulls. But the Bulls have kept going and kept playing at a fairly decent level. I mean, Luol Deng has missed a lot of games as well. So the reality is with this compressed schedule, injuries may play a big and has played a big role in what's going to happen moving forward in these playoffs. And it's going to be an exciting playoff. It's going to be a good playoff. And I think – especially in the Western Conference, it's going to be a wide-open playoff, a very wide-open playoff. I mean, I was looking at it the other day, and I was saying to myself, and just looking at it, looking at the standings, I could name probably six teams in the Western Conference who you say has a decent shot of getting to the NBA Finals, and that is San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Los Angeles Lakers and Clippers, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Dallas Mavericks. Those six teams, in my mind, have an opportunity to win a series. I mean, not a series, get to the NBA Finals. Those teams have an opportunity to get to an NBA Final. I'm not saying – I mean, my favorite – I like Oklahoma City, but and I've had Oklahoma City since the beginning of the year, but I think Memphis could beat Oklahoma City in a series. They pushed them to 7 games a year ago. I mean, I think the Clippers could beat Oklahoma City in a series. I think the Lakers could beat Oklahoma City. I think the Lakers could beat San Antonio, but I think San Antonio could beat the Lakers. I think the Clippers could beat San Antonio. I mean, you get the point here. You get the point here. It's a wide-open situation. It is a wide-open situation. And we'll see how this whole thing plays out. I'm interested. I'm interested. I'm stoked. I'm pumped.
Well, it's certainly, and I think you said it, I mean, the West Coast, I think, is going to be a lot more intriguing. Than the East Coast. I think the only matchup in the East Coast that, you know, people are looking for will be Miami and Chicago.
Right, and possibly Boston, but you're right, Miami and Chicago.
I think Boston will be a non-factor in the East and in the playoffs. They're too old. It's all hype. You know this part better than anybody. As soon as the playoffs start, that's a brand new season. And this is a team that they're so old that, you know, I just don't see that unit now 6 years old being that. I think people are – it's like the Lakers, except they don't have a young guy like Bynum, period.
I look at Boston and I see a team that – you know, earlier in the season, they struggled, and they struggled mightily. But after the All-Star break, they were a totally different team. You move Kevin Garnett to the center spot. Avery Bradley steps in at the shooting guard spot. Ray Allen comes off the bench. They have become a totally different team in the second half of the season. Do I think they're a championship team? No. I agree with you I don't think they are. But I'm not going to sleep on them either. And if I'm Boston or Chicago, it's probably a team that I don't want to see. But, I mean, to your point, though, I don't think that they're a team that will do it. I just don't think they will. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. Definitely see what happens. But I'm looking forward to it. That's all I can say. I'm salivating at this point when talking about the NBA playoffs. I really am. And it's going to be great. It's going to be a good old time. Good old time watching NBA basketball and these NBA playoffs. The NBA is fantastic. 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 And I know everybody, and I'll be repeating this throughout these next few weeks, these next couple months, but you can talk about Christmas and being the best time of the year, the most wonderful time of the year. You could talk about March Madness, but give me the NBA playoffs 40 days and 40 nights, any day, any time. Give me that over that, over the NCAA tournament, over anything. Give me that. Your thoughts, Jeremy?
Look, this you keep going on and on, and I agree. The West Coast is going to be, I think the West Coast will be predominantly a very interesting, and it always seems to be more interesting sometimes than the East Coast. But this year especially, all the hype is out there, and I think well-deserved. I'm eager to see, what is going to happen, potentially with the Lakers, probably more so than anybody, because this has been a troubled year for Kobe and the Lakers. And if this playoff, if they're embarrassed in this playoffs, you could probably assume that there could be a big shakeup, in the Lakers organization. Not that they're, kind of already hasn't been the rumblings. And also with the younger, with the Clippers, seeing what, if anything, they're going to do. And also, it can... We can see what ultimately is going to happen in terms of who will be representing, the West versus, I think, two dominant, potentially soon-to-be NBA champions out in the East, and that's Miami and Chicago, who are playing, extremely well. But again, the West is the champion defender, and can they or will they not be able to keep their crown.
And we shall see. I mean, it's like I said, it's going to be compelling basketball, especially in the Western Conference. It's going to be very compelling. But like you talked about the Eastern Conference, Miami and Chicago, it's going to come down to those two teams. And I just cannot – I can see Boston giving somebody, one of those two teams, a tough time, but I cannot see Boston beating those two teams in a seven-game series. But we shall see, and we shall see, and that is why you play the game. We're going to bring in now a man preparing for the upcoming NFL draft, just a few days away, just around the corner. Former University of Miami quarterback, the one, the only, Ja'Cory Harris. Ja'Cory, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem at all.
Ja'Cory, the NFL draft, like I said, is a few days away. All the preparation, all those things are out the window now, and the draft is upon us. What's your mindset right now as the draft is just a few days away?
Oh, my mindset is a clear one. I'm just going to go into it with a very optimistic about things, just happy for it to be almost here and almost over because, the process was long and just nerve-wracking. So, right now I'm just in a comfortable position. I'm just ready to see what happens.
And throughout this whole process, the combine, your pro day, you had an opportunity, a great opportunity to show your ability to throw the football. Are you happy with the way you performed?
I'm very happy. With the feedback coming back from teams at the combine and then that pro day and the workouts, everything is going well and I get nothing but positive feedback. So, I did what I had to do and I took care of my part. Now I'm just, waiting on that blessing to happen.
And that blessing is around the corner, like we said, about 5-6 days away. And looking at it now, man, you're a tremendous athlete, but you're more of a pocket passer. Talk about your style of play.
Yeah, most people, when it comes to, I guess, a black quarterback, they think of, you know, a guy that runs around all the time, and I'm not like that. I choose to pass first, and if I have to or if I can, and if it's going to help the team, I will run. I would run. So it's a part of football, and it's a part of being an athlete because I do have athletic ability, so I will use it. And, you know, just – but I'd rather pass first, and it's something that I think that is good.
Right. And I was reading somewhere where you compared your game to Donovan McNabb. Talk about that comparison.
I compared it to Donovan McNabb because he's not really a run-first quarterback, and he's a black quarterback. And he sits back in the pocket. He picks apart defenses, and he does his job as a quarterback first. And then if he's in trouble, he decides to run because he has the athletic ability to do so. And
right.
I feel like I'm the same.
We're talking to former University of Miami quarterback Jacory Harris as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Jacory, one of the knocks on your game is turnovers and is decision-making. And when you hear those type of things, and how do you respond to something like that?
Well, I've had turnovers in my career. That's something that everybody knows. But I've changed that my senior year, up until the last game. But my senior year, going into the last game, I had 5 interceptions. So with 19 touchdowns before the game. And, you know, I just feel like being in the offense that I was in and having the opportunity to really manage and control the offense the way I could, I was able to cut down on the mistakes and just become a better quarterback.
Right. And you did that, 20 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions. So you did that. You became a better quarterback during your senior season at Miami. And Jacory, you were suspended for 1 game for receiving illegal benefits at Miami. But in a lot of ways, you talked about how stressful this draft process was, but in a lot of ways, this was an opportunity for you to show the GMs and the coaches the real you. Did you look at it that way?
I did look at it that way because even though I don't think people really judged us on the 1-game suspension because of all of the circumstances with how the guy of what was really going on, but I also did surprise a lot of people. A lot of people didn't know about my personality, how I was in person as a football player and outside of football. So I got a chance to really impress a lot of guys, and I feel like I did that.
And Jacory, the draft boards, they change by the day. Have you been paying attention to them? And at this point, where are you hearing you may go?
At this point, I have no idea where I would end up, and I don't think anybody knows except for the teams that are drafting. Who knows? You know, surprises do happen. So, you know, I'm just ready for whatever there is to come, and I'll be sitting on my phone waiting.
And where are you going to watch the draft at?
I got a condo down here, so I'm inviting my family and stuff, and they're going to come over here to my condo, and we're going to watch it.
Okay. Quiet party, big party?
Not really a big party. I don't know. I just like to be around my family, just
right.
the main people, just the people that I've been here with my whole life and been supporting me.
And Jacory, on the show, we like to play a game called Getting to Know You. We want to get to know you better as you're preparing to become an NFL player. You ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Your favorite football player growing up?
My favorite football player growing up? It's gonna be a shame because people are going to hate this team, but, oh, man, Jacquez Green.
Okay, Jacquez Green, Florida, University of Florida.
Yep.
How can you do that? How could
That's
you?
What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. People are going to hate that answer.
Your favorite food?
My favorite food is kung salad. It's a Bahamian dish.
Explain that. What's in it?
It's a snail. And it's raw. So you pretty much, if you go to the Bahamian Islands, they pretty much you know, take the conch right out the shell and then cut it up right there and put it in a salad with, like, onions, bell peppers, cucumbers, and then, like, some lemon juice and a little bit of salt to season it.
That sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty good. Interesting.
It's real good. It's like, it's almost like ceviche.
Okay, okay. Your favorite movie?
Favorite movie was Armageddon.
Okay. Why Armageddon?
It was like the first movie I cried in. And
wow.
Like, when he had to make the decision, when he stayed there and risked his life for his daughter and his soon-to-be son-in-law.
Okay. You know what, I got to big you up for that. I mean, you're man enough to say, you know what, I cry, and that's big. That's big. I got to give you some props for that. And last question, your favorite song or artist that you listened to before a big game?
Oh, Chris Brown.
Chris Brown, okay. What Chris Brown?
At the time, it's usually anything that's out. Like, any Chris Brown song is out. I pretty much downloaded every song he probably possibly made. That's like my favorite artist, so.
Okay. Wow, so I mean, you're really showing who you really are. That's a good thing. I mean, Chris Brown, you cry during movies. I mean, not too many people will admit that, but you're being a big man right now.
Yeah, I don't have no problem with the man stuff like that.
Right.
That's
a good thing. That's a good thing. Don't be ashamed of who you are. That's a great thing. and Jacoria, I see you're on Twitter. Where can fans connect with you on Twitter?
Oh, where? Oh, they can find me at 12jharris12 on Twitter. I'm there from time to time. I read my mentions. You know, I try my best to respond to everybody. I try my best.
Hey, that's all you could do, try your best. And Jacoria, we appreciate you stopping by, man, as you prepare for the draft. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, and let's do this again.
Okay, no problem. Whenever you want to.
All right, take care, sir. Good luck.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Jacoria Harris, quarterback, University of Miami, as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And I was impressed there. I mean, the man said, you know what, I listened to Chris Brown before a game. That gets me going. The man says he's not afraid to cry. He tells us that he cried during Armageddon. Impressive. I mean, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with that. You know what I mean? The guy is, he's acting, you know, real men cry. And he's telling us, you know what, I'm a real man. He just told me right there that he is a real man.
Did you cry during Armageddon, Paul? I mean, I know you had to see that at one point in your life, I believe for a final exam.
That is right. I forgot about that.
You forgot about that.
There is a story behind that. Yes, we did have to watch Armageddon for a physics class at Temple University. It was a part of the curriculum. It was a part of the course. I guess I have to admit now at this point, and I didn't see Armageddon, and I did receive a ticket from somebody that said I did, but I did not see Armageddon. I don't like movies too much, and so I didn't see Armageddon. I didn't see it, and I guess I have to admit it at this point. It's been what? That was, you're talking about 1990, that was almost what, 14, 15 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. But I forgot about that. But Armageddon, I didn't see it. I don't plan on seeing it, but maybe I will see it now. I mean, because I want to see that part where he cries at, so I can kind of see why. I want to see that part. So maybe I will, you know, go rent the movie Armageddon. Maybe. You gonna rent it too?
Probably not. I wouldn't hold my breath on that.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Then. At least I asked. I just had to throw it out there. But, you know, I just thought I would ask. And Armageddon again, big-time movie. It was a big-time movie. That was, again, late 90s when that came out. Late 90s. It's crazy. And we've been talking about the NFL draft. And right now there's been reports that you had an agent. Not an agent, a scout who came out basically and called RG3, Robert Griffin III, selfish. Called him a me guy in some respect. And you're going to see a lot of this stuff come out before the draft, and it could just be, you know, somebody trying to get into his head, a team that knows and that they don't have really a shot to get him, trying to get into his head. And, you know, so I don't know how much you can really read into this draft, into that. With this whole draft thing, I mean, you're going to have guys just lying about, you know, not lying, but you're going to have various things, well, lies. You're going to have some lies coming out about people and people just, you know, doing things for all in the name of trying to move up, move down, trying to show that they're not interested, trying to show all those different type of things. So it's just the nature of the game. It's you know, it's business, and business isn't always a pretty thing. And I think that's basically what that's about. I mean, Griffin III has proven pretty much everything that he can prove at this point. I mean, Heisman Trophy winner, big-time player, put up big-time numbers throughout the course of his career. I mean, so there's really nothing he hasn't done throughout the course of his career. So I don't really read too much into it. I mean, and I think, again, you're going to have those type of stories come out close to the draft. It happens all the time. I think you had some things about Cam Newton as well before the draft last year. So these type of things are going to come out. And, again, it's just the nature of the beast, and the scout said he had a selfish streak, and I don't really know what that looks like. Jeremy, a selfish streak, what does that look like?
Well, I mean, and the bottom line is, I mean, I think it's like you said, especially now, I mean, this draft is millions and millions and millions of dollars are at stake. And you know better than anybody, when it comes to money, you know, there's going to be a lot of haters that want to come out. And, I mean, I think any player that you expect to excel better have a selfish streak.
Well, I mean, I mean, that's a great point. And a lot of times they say greatness is selfish.
You know, I think ultimately when you look at what that's been saying, when you define selfish, here again, okay, what do you want this person to, I mean, I guess, portray, to look like, to say? These kind of things are ultimately important. I mean, you don't expect a franchise-type quarterback, these are once in, I think, millennia-type. They're saying this RG3, Robert Griffin III, is going to be, you know, on a potentially all-pro level. I mean, so you have to be. It wasn't selfish of Eli Manning to say he believes he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league last year. I mean, if it wasn't selfish, it was certainly narcissistic. And if you're narcissistic, I have to believe to a certain degree you're somewhat selfish. And so that's the thing. I think when you look at the trait of selfishness, I mean, if it's contained or, you know, if it's in the right mode, is it a bad thing to say you're a selfish athlete? Meaning you want to – if wanting to win is selfish. I mean, but – because I guess the politically or non-selfish answer would be what Tim Tebow said. I don't know that. I think these comments are made when they're just trying to get a reaction from a player, and try to test him to see if what they can say will egg him on to say something, a little bit maybe out of character for him that would show something else that can be exploited. I think the right thing was done, which is, you know, I would just shrug it all off, especially until after the draft.
And it was two scouts interviewed by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and again, they're anonymous, but one of the scouts said that he's got a little bit of a selfish streak. Everybody was laying on Cam Newton, that is, but for some reason, this guy has become gloves off. He doesn't treat anybody good. And so, I mean, that's one scout's take. The same scout also talked about, and this is his quotes, as much as it is written about his athleticism under the rest in the pocket isn't even close to Cam Newton's, the scout said. This guy, the only way he gets big plays with his feet is if he got a wide open field and the sea opens up for him. And then another scout questioned the hype around Griffin III and said there was a lot of bad tape out there. And the scout went on to say, everybody is just assuming because of the Heisman and the Sox and all that BS, they are ignoring a lot of bad tape that he had. I don't think he has the vision or pocket feel, which to me are the two most important components of quarterbacking. He's just running around and winging it. He's Vic, but not as good of a thrower. And that's another scout's take on Robert Griffin III, RG3. And again, how much of it is like you said, it's just to throw something out there about a guy to see how he'll respond. How much is it is just somebody out there just putting these things out there because they know they don't have a shot at the guy. I mean, I don't know. And how much of it is legitimate? I mean, could it be legitimate? Is it legitimate? And is RG3, is he overhyped? I mean, only time will tell. But he seems to possess all the necessary skills to be a competent and franchise-type caliber quarterback. He seems to have that skill set. We'll see. We shall see. But, I mean, it's just the nature of this draft process. Everybody is not going to like you. It's just like this. If you put your picture on hotornot.com or something, you may have 10 who like you. You may have 15 who hate you. You might have another 20 who love you. You may have another 2 who hate you. You may have another 5 who love you, another 3 who hate you. I mean, it's just the nature of the situation. Everybody's eyes are different. Your eyes may like something different from my eyes. Your eyes may see something different than that my eyes don't see. And so that's what you have here with these scouts and with these GMs and with these coaches and everything. This draft process is not an exact science, and that's why they try to do the Wunderlich testing and all these various testings, all these various interview techniques, so on and so forth, because this is not an exact science. And so because of that, you're trying all these different ways to try to figure out whether or not such and such player is going to be a good player or a legitimate player on your team. And so it's just, I guess, a part of the process. It's just the nature of the beast. It's just the nature of the situation. But I just say, you know, how much can you read into it? And the reality is there is no science. There is no exact science. If there were exact sciences for things, people would be jumping on it. If there was an exact science for this draft process, somebody would have jumped on it and discovered it and done something with it, with all those billions of dollars that's out there. I mean, you're talking about the investments that some of these ownerships, some of these teams are about to make in some of these players. The investments that they're about to make are big-time investments. And so when you make an investment of that nature, of that caliber, of that size, you got to make sure you got this thing right. And again, every eye is different. Every eye ain't right. And every eye ain't wrong. And so that's just the nature of this whole process. It's not, in some respects, it's a crapshoot. It's really a crapshoot. How can you really determine? I mean, you got the tape. You got what they've done on the college level. You've got all the interviews and what they said. But it's tough. I mean, players who have dominated on the collegiate level haven't dominated in the pro game. Ryan Leaf, a perfect example, a big-time quarterback at Washington State. When he went to the San Diego Chargers, he was a bust, and now he's a criminal. So it's just there is no science to this thing, and people are always trying to find ways to make a legitimate and make a great decision and make the best decision for their franchise, but there is no science to this thing, and it's going to be hard to figure out who is hot and who is not. And that's the bottom line. It's hard to figure this thing out. And no matter what you say, no matter what you do. But this is truly the ultimate crapshoot. It's the ultimate crapshoot because there is no exact science on how to do this. But we'll see.
Well, but let's say this, Paul. I mean, the guys like Ryan Leaf, who you use, which is a good example, I mean, in a way, the science there was Ryan Leaf was not going to be as good as Peyton Manning. This year, for example, I mean, I think when you look at a guy like Robert Griffin help me out. Hey,
Andrew Luck.
You know, I think Griffin has some potential upside, absolutely. But, I mean, you're seeing a guy in Luck who is just so fundamentally sound at every point that really makes a difference. to, you know, yeah, they're a 1-2, and it's the way it's going to shake out. But that's the problem is when teams make these reaches. And look at the Eagles and Mike LaMula. I mean, the guy had a 2-day workout of his career, and the Eagles thought, which I always think is a great draft because it wasn't a quarterback, wasn't a running back. It was a linebacker, defensive lineman, who just does really well in a combine situation and somehow becomes the next, he's going to become the next LT. It doesn't work. Like, very rarely will you go into a combine and have that level of an outcome, in my opinion. The draft is won and lost when you draft the best available known athlete, period.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
unless,
go ahead.
When you make these reaches, when you say, well, this guy is going to project to be this, I think it unless, again, there was substance behind this, if it's coming out of a combine or he runs a something 40, they're crazy.
Well, and again, I mean, that's why you have the combines, the Wonderlic tests, all those things. That's why you have all those things because there's really no science to this thing. And that's why you're going to have all those different type of things, and all to try to put that perfect picture together whether or not this person will be a legitimate player on the next level. I mean, one part of the picture is the Wonderlic. Another part is the combine. Another part of the picture is their tape and what they've done throughout the course of their college career. Another part of the picture, I guess, is all the interviews and finding out the character side of this person. I mean, all these various parts of the picture come together for you to try to figure out whether or not this person, this player, is going to contribute on your ball club for X amount of years. But again, I hate to keep repeating myself, but there really is not a science to this. And I guess that's the beauty of it, too. That's the beauty of it, because in some respect, it's an art. Because you can have all the measurables in the world, 40 time, bench press reps, Wonderlic score, decent college player, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, you don't know sometimes how a person is going to be on that next level. You don't know sometimes how a person is going to react to a crisis situation, to a pressure situation. You don't know these things. And that's why you have the questions, the Wonderlic, and all those good things that are out there. Good things, bad things, however you may slice it. And speaking of the Wonderlic test, these tests are supposed to be, they're supposed to be, I've lost my train of thought. They're supposed to be, you're not supposed to know these things. These are supposed to be private. They're not supposed to be leaked. And yesterday, Robert Griffin III, his Wonderlic score came out. Andrew Luck had a better Wonderlic score, and this is according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, excuse me. Andrew Luck had a better score than Robert Griffin III. Andrew Luck scored a 37. RG3 scored a 24. And both, according to the Wonderlic testing, 24 is average for a quarterback. Hold on, let me read that. The average quarterback is considered to be 24, so both players, or their average. 24 is the average score for a quarterback. And Robert Griffin III had 24 on his test, and Andrew Luck a 37. And Andrew Luck actually scored 9 points higher than Peyton Manning, if that means anything. I don't know how much it means, but Peyton Manning is considered to be a smart, bright quarterback, a guy who seems to call his own plays and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I don't know how much I read into the Wonderlic. I mean, intelligence is important in football. You need to be intelligent. You need to have that intelligence. You definitely need to have that intelligence. But you look at last year's guy, Cam Newton. He scored. He had a lower score in the Wonderlic test a year ago. So I don't know how much you can read into it. And he had a very good rookie season, a big-time rookie season. It kind of came out of nowhere last year. So who knows? Again, I don't really read too much into the Wonderlic, but There are people out here who do. And some say there is a correlation between a high Wunderlich score and success on the football field. I don't know. We'll see. But there you have it. The Wunderlich scores of various players through over the years. And Cam Newton, again, not a high Wunderlich score. Not a high one. And Robert Griffin III and Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck beat him out in a Wunderlich battle. Beat him out in a Wunderlich battle. And I want to go to something else that's kind of been on my mind, kind of bothered me a little bit. And it's corporate welfare. And that's exactly what's going on in Minnesota. We had Roger Goodell, who came down to Minnesota, along with Art Rooney II, to try to get the legislature in Minnesota to pass a bill for some kind of funding for a downtown open-air stadium. I mean, you're going to have a situation where the city and the state, the city which is Minneapolis and the state Minnesota, they're going to be forking up a bill of $548 million, which is 56% of the total cost. 56% of the total cost, $548 million to a wealthy owner, Ziggy Wolf in Minnesota, and to a wealthy entity, which is the NFL, billion-dollar business. It's just you read these things, and I love football just like the next man. I love sports, obviously, just like the next man. But I see these type of things, and it's alarming. It's alarming. Well, let me stop you for a second. It's alarming when you have a situation where you got schools which are not the greatest in and around the country. You have people complaining about the poor getting health care. You have people complaining about, various people on welfare, the poor people who actually could use welfare, who can use the money. I mean, you have people complaining about that as well. If this is not hypocritical, I don't know what else is. This is hypocritical. $548 million for a downtown stadium. How important is a downtown stadium to Minnesota? What's more important, educating your children, making sure that your people within your community, within your state, have health care? Which is more important, the education and the health care of your people, or $548 million to subsidize a downtown stadium? You tell me. You tell me.
Well, I'll tell you that you can sit there all you want, Paul, and those are a plight of the people problems, and the stadium is really, it's potentially for cities, it's a business problem. And I'm by no means, sitting here saying that every city that has a professional sports team should be doing this, but you have to think about what cities you're talking about. I mean, Minneapolis, Paul, I've been there twice. It's a smaller city in getting out to the Midwest, and they have a convention center, and certainly they have the Metro Dome, which was a big piece of what where they gone to travel from. It's not a big economic hub, and so their sporting teams locally will drive an economy to a certain degree. Giving that up, and that's why I say it's very easy to sit there and say, well, these teams and these owners should be paying for everything themselves. Then you also should say, well, then so businesses that want to headquarter themselves in any city should not get any special tax benefits, because basically that's what a sports franchise does, is they headquarter, inside. But sports teams are franchises of a league, but a Cisco, for example, McDonald's, which is out in Chicago, you don't think the McDonald's Corporation gets, billions and billions of dollars in, tax write-offs? You look at, basically the state of New Jersey, which every major drug company in the country is almost headquartered in, and they get huge tax benefits for that. So you're singling out the NFL teams and saying, well, the stadium could pay for some parts of, citizens' health insurances. Well, why not then say, you know what? There's no tax benefit to anyone to be headquartered. And then what will happen is everyone will go headquarter in Malaysia where it doesn't cost them anything, and you'll see a huge, you know, swing in what essentially becomes economic funding, because big companies aren't going to pay to be here any more than a sports franchise is going to pay to be here when they have to sit around and get no benefit.
We're going to bring in now a guy preparing for the upcoming NFL draft. Let's bring in UTEP cornerback, the one, the only, Antoine Blake. Antoine, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And, Antoine, the draft is a few days away. At this point, what is going on in your mind as this day approaches?
You know, I've been going over a lot of the possibilities of things that can happen, but at the same time, just trying to do the same things I've been doing for the most part of the few months, and just trying to stay relaxed and just keep my mind open for everything.
And looking at it, man, I look at your game. Speed is a big part of your game. You ran a 4.340 at your pro day. Were you happy with your performance at your pro day?
Yeah, I was pretty happy. I ran a 4.25, actually, you know.
4.25, okay.
Well, yeah, I was
4.25, even better.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, you know. I was just waiting to see the outcome of my performance.
And what have you heard at this point about that outcome of your performance? I mean, where are you hearing that you may go, or will you have to do the free agent thing?
Well, you know, according to my agent, a couple of teams have me as high as the fifth round, and, you know, some teams have me as low as free agency.
Okay.
So I really don't know. You know, I'm just waiting to see how this thing plays out.
Is it nerve-wracking at this point? I mean, you're just sitting here and you don't even know what could happen. You're saying you could go 5. You may not go at all. I mean, how tough is that?
I mean, it's pretty tough. But, you know, I have faith in the Lord that, you know, whatever happens, you know, would be the best thing for me regardless. So, you know, I'm not really too concerned about it.
Right. And that's all you can do at this point. We're talking to UTEP cornerback Antoine Blake as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And, Antoine, what do you feel like you need to do or improve upon on the next level to be effective on the next level?
Well, you know, one thing that I know would be a key thing as soon as I get in with the team is, you know, learning the system and just being able to recognize things as fast as I can, you know, and put myself in a better position, the best position I can in order to make a play.
And that's what you got to do on the next level, and that's what you're preparing to do. Take us through the day in the life of Antoine Blake as he prepares for this draft.
Well, you know, usually I've been working out for probably about 3 months straight now. You know, I wake up around 8 o'clock, get myself together, shower, eat, and all that type of thing. And then I go work out with my trainer for about three to four hours a day. You know, I come back and just take a shower, take a nap, eat, you know, go to sleep and repeat the same thing every day. You know, it's been the same thing about 3 months now.
Has it been hectic?
You know, sometimes it does, because, you know, It's a grind, you know. Some days I get tired, and some days I don't want to get up. But, you know, I have a lot of things in my mind to focus about, and that's what helps me get out of bed.
Right.
So, I mean.
And looking at it now, I mean, UTEP, a smaller school. This is a great I look at this whole process for a guy like you as a great opportunity to prove yourself. Did you look at it that way?
Yeah, I really did look at it this way because, you know, like you said, we're a smaller program and we didn't have too many positive seasons while I was there. So, you know, when you're not winning too many games, you know, people don't really want to come and see what you're about. You know, they might hear about you, but, you know, at the end, they really don't care if you're not winning. So, you know, I just want to show them that, you know, even though my team didn't do as good as everybody else, we still had enough talent, you know, that I feel that some people should have came in and evaluated, you know.
Right. And where do you plan on watching this NFL draft at? You got somewhere you're going to watch it at, anywhere special?
You know, I really haven't decided yet. I might just stay in the house, you know. That's what I usually
right.
do. I just stay in the house and watch TV. But, you know, in the event that I decide to go out, it won't be nowhere, you know, enormous. I'll just probably go to somewhere small with a TV
right.
and some food or something.
What kind of food you going to have?
You know, probably some hot wings or something. You know,
okay.
I like hot wings.
All right. And that's a good thing to have as you prepare for the draft. We're talking to former UTEP cornerback Antoine Blake as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Antoine, on the show, we like to ask some of the NFL prospects. We like to get to know them a little better as they prepare for the draft and as they get ready for the draft. You ready to play? I got a few questions for you. I want to get to know you.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Antoine, your favorite football player growing up?
You know, back in my growing up, I was a big fan of FSU in around the 99 area. So I'm going to have to go with Peter Warrick.
Peter Warrick, okay. Yeah, Peter Warrick was a man at Florida State. He was a beast. He was a beast there. Your favorite food?
You know, I'm a big fan of Chinese food. I can eat Chinese food every day if I can.
You don't want that now. You don't want that. You're preparing. You don't want that.
Nah.
What's your favorite?
You know, I like to keep it simple. I can eat shrimp fried rice every day, man. Just plain out shrimp fried rice.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that as well. Definitely a big fan of that. Your favorite movie?
It's a mix up between Scarface and Menace to Society.
Okay. I'm gonna pick Menace to Society. I'm gonna choose for you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're both two great movies.
They are two great movies, definitely. And the final question: the song or artist that you listen to before a big game.
You know, that question, that's another mix-up, too. Because, you know, I am a Southern kid, you know, a kid from the South. So I like to listen to artists like Zero out of Houston and Trader Truth out of Houston, you know. They give me the type of songs I need to get my head right before a game.
And you talked about it. You talked about some of the music in Houston. I don't get the whole the chopped and screwed thing. I don't really get that too much.
Yeah, you know. When you move to the South, you have to have a quiet ear for that type of music.
Right. I'm trying to get it.
It's just a fixture in the Southern community. Just
right.
Another way to listen to the music. I mean, I personally like it.
Okay. I tried. I just couldn't get into it. I tried.
Yeah.
I definitely tried. And looking at it now, Antoine, I see you on Twitter. Where can fans connect with you on Twitter?
Well, on Twitter, you can just type in Antoine Blake, or you can type in my username, which is @ZillaZBlake. Zilla like Godzilla, V as in victory, and then just Blake.
Okay. Fans, make sure you connect with this man on Twitter. Wish him nothing but the best of luck as he prepares. He's prepared at this point as the draft is upon us. I mean, it's a week away. And, Antoine, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, man. Let's do this again. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Appreciate you having me, man. No problem.
And I apologize for having you wait. That was a technical error on our part. Again, I apologize. Again, thanks for joining us.
Oh, yes, sir. No problem.
Antoine Blake, as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft, which is right around the corner. It's a few days away, and he's getting ready. I mean, the man is fast. The man is he's fast. And so speed kills, obviously. So if you have speed in this league, in the NFL, you are going to get an opportunity. I think he's going to get an opportunity, whether he's drafted or whether it's the free agency route. He is going to get an opportunity. So we'll see. But Antoine Blake, we appreciate him stopping by. And, again, it was a technical error on our part. We wish we could have got him on sooner. Something wrong with this thing here, so we've got to get this fixed. But, again, we appreciate Antoine for stopping by. I mean, Jeremy, how excited are you for this draft? I mean, this is right around the corner. It contains the future of your favorite team. I mean, my favorite team is the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to this draft.
Well, the NFL did the smartest thing, I think, moving into prime time, it's like watching a game again. So it gets us all on the field, and certainly I think it's interesting. I'm sure you read the reports. It looks like Andrew Luck's going to go first, and obviously we knew Griffin was certainly poised to be obviously one or two, and the Redskins moving up. So it's going to be very interesting. I've been reading a couple articles in ESPN's Insider about how running backs are going to be kind of pushed to the back, and every draft scenario is always neat. But this is a pretty talented draft pool. I think that deeper. This is one of these drafts again where I think there's a lot of I think a lot of interesting running backs to see where they do go. Certainly, what the Eagles would do is always important. for you and I from a home standpoint, and they have some needs, and certainly, you know, they've been shopping around Asante Samuel, who I think comes out, makes good, if you will, on or better put, politically doesn't cause himself any undue hardship. Basically admits that if they're going to trade him, then they're going to trade him, and he wants to let you know his career, certainly with the Eagles and even dating back to the Patriots, speak for itself. And I think, you know, it's tough to be talked, you know, about as being traded when you're a player of his status. But that's the things I think he should have been saying from the start, which is, well, I don't want to leave Philadelphia. My performance, if you're a team in need of a cornerback, should be speaking for itself. And I think the Eagles may want to rethink that. Certainly they have some needs. But you know as well as I do, Paul, I mean, it's certainly to have three cornerbacks of the ilk that they have, it's hard-pressed in today's NFL and with injuries and the like. I don't know. I mean, unless they're able to move up, you know, I would say close to a top 10, I don't think there's value there for the Eagles. And that's mainly, as I said, I still think Asante Samuel has a lot of good football to play. And I think, you know, this is a team defensively that's still trying to figure out who they are. But I don't think Asante Samuel was the problem last year. And when you look at, you know, their needs, I mean, in terms of a draft board, it's all over the place. I mean, aside from the fact that they don't need a running back, I mean, they need help pretty much all over. So, you know, it will be an interesting draft for all teams, but certainly the Eagles for you and I. I think we just may have lost Paul for 1 second. We're in the middle of some technical difficulties, so I can say, you know, I don't ever mind him getting a breather. And as we talked about the draft, and we're talking about, you know, NFL stadiums, and we've had two players on it. And what you hear a lot of times from the draft perspective players is certainly that it's a business for them. You know, I think, Paul, that we get you back there.
Yeah, I'm back here. Pushed the wrong button there, but I am back. And I'm going to bring in now a guy I think could help the Philadelphia Eagles, a guy who's done some big work in a kickoff return game and the wide receiver game, and that is the one, the only T.Y. Hilton. T.Y., how are you, sir?
I'm good, and you? How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And T.Y., I said it to all the other draft prospects we had here, but the NFL draft is a few days away. At this point, what is going through your mind?
Just sit back and wait and be patient. I did my part, and I know my agent has done his, so now it's just time to sit back and let the team do theirs.
And T.Y., you did do your thing at FIU. I mean, you were a big-time playmaker during your time there. You're the ultimate home run hitter. Talk about your big playability.
My big playability is what I have, my God-given talent, and I love making plays. I love changing games. That's what I bring to the table from a special team guy and as a receiver.
And T.Y., as we know, in college and in the NFL, on the NFL level, speed kills, and you have a lot of it. You ran a 4.3 40 at your pro day. All in all, were you happy with your performance at your pro day?
Oh, yes, sir. I was very excited, especially not being able to train for 3 months and then going out there and running that time. I was very proud of myself because the time I went was incredible without the 3 months that I was there. So it was good to see that the rehab paid off.
And how difficult was those 3 months, just getting yourself right and getting yourself ready?
It was very difficult because I never had tore anything. I never had a serious injury as the one that I had. So the rehab was good. I stayed with it. They told me just stay focused and just keep grinding. And that's what I did, and it helped me prevail.
We're talking to former FIU wide receiver T.Y. Hilton as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft, which is right around the corner. And T.Y., this has to be a very difficult process for you, having to talk to various teams, the workouts, everything that's involved here. Talk about this whole experience for you.
The experience has been real good. see the coaches and players that you see on TV, and then you finally get to meet them during the visit. Yeah, it's really nice. And then when you get one-on-one with the coaches, they just want to find out the type of player you are, how smart you is on the board, do you understand football. And it was incredible to just be with those guys, and I enjoyed the experience.
What was it stressful for you?
I can't hear you.
Was it a stressful time for you?
Oh, no, not really. It was perfect timing.
Okay. And we talked about some of the things you bring to the game, the speed, your playmaking ability, all the things that you do. But all in all, what does T.Y. Hilton bring to an NFL roster?
T.Y. Hilton brings a lot. He changed games. He could take a 5-yard pass, turn it to 67-yard touchdown, punt return, kick return. He can go to the house at any time in the game. So you can put me at quarterback, wildcat guy, do a little fake and run, and I can take that for a touchdown. So my ability to change games is what helps me a lot.
And you remind me a lot of DeSean Jackson. I know you guys share the same agent. Were you able to talk to DeSean at all?
No, when I was in fit, I didn't see him, but I talked to Macklin. I talked to Macklin while I was up there.
Okay. And you did work out with the Philadelphia Eagles. How did that go?
No, I didn't work out. I just talked with the coaches. Yes, sir.
Okay. And how did that work out for you? How'd that go?
It went real good. They liked me. They said they could use me a lot, especially to the end as a receiver, because get DeSean legs a break, because he's taking 80 snaps at receiver, so you don't want to jeopardize that with his contract he just signed at punt return and kick return, so they think I can change games like him.
And definitely, and you can change the game with kickoffs. I mean, you've had 4 kickoff returns, 4 touchdowns during your college career, great college career there at FIU. But take us through the art of a successful kickoff return.
Everything got a fold in place. Just being able to make those guys miss, the first 2 guys that miss, then it's a wrap after that, because once you get one-on-one with a kicker, you know it's a home run time, but you got to be able to make that last guy miss, and you also got to have that extra gear to pull away from those guys, because they're going to keep chasing you down until you get to the end zone, so you got to have that second gear once you get past everyone.
And you got that 4.3 speed, so I don't see any kicker on this earth that should be able to track you down. I don't see it. And you talked about you met with the Eagles. Any other teams, any other facilities did you visit during this time?
Oh, yeah, I met with the Dallas Cowboys, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I worked out for Baltimore, the Patriots, and the Dolphins.
Okay. And I was reading somewhere that your favorite team growing up was the Raiders.
No, that's my daddy's favorite team.
That was your dad's favorite team. Okay.
Yes,
so I'm assuming that your dad wants you to go to the Raiders.
Yeah, he wanted me to go there, but he understands, it's a business, so wherever I land, he'll be happy with it.
We're talking to T.Y. Hilton, wide receiver, former wide receiver FIU, as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And T.Y., where do you plan on watching this draft? Where are you going to watch
it? I'm going to watch it at my house where I always normally watch the draft, and just be with my mom, dad, and my sister, and my brother.
And at this point, I mean, the draft boards, they change from day to day, week to week. At this point, do you know what round you may be going in?
Before all this, they had me going 4th, 5th, but me with the coaches, talking with them in Indy and them seeing my performance and my ability to run and change games, they said I could go early 2nd round to the 3rd, so my stock has been rising over these past couple of weeks, so let's see where the chips fall.
Well, we shall see. You had a great pro day, and that definitely helped you during this process. And T.Y. on the show, we like to get to know some of these draft picks, some of these draft prospects as they're preparing for the draft and as they're about to be drafted. So we got a few questions for you to get to know you a little better. You ready to play?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Most definitely.
Okay, T.Y., what is your favorite food?
My favorite food is soul food, macaroni and chicken.
Oh, man. But I know you had to push that away a little bit during this time, right?
Oh, yeah. I had to eat healthy.
That had to be tough. Maybe on the draft day when you get drafted, you can have some chicken and some macaroni and cheese, little collard greens, yams, barbecue ribs, so on and so forth.
I can't wait to have that back.
I'm salivating as I'm saying these things. Your favorite player growing up?
Deion Sanders, prime time. I love the way he was able to pick the balls off and run punt returns and do the little dance he did with the little high step. And that always just seemed to excite me.
Do you have a little dance or a little high step you might implement on the next level?
Oh, no, I'll just go salute. I'm just going to salute to the soldiers.
Okay, fair enough. And nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Yes.
Your favorite team, I know your dad's favorite team was the Raiders, but your favorite team growing up?
Favorite team growing up was the Dallas Cowboys, watching Deion, Trey Aikman, Mike Irvin, and Emmitt. So I used to love watching those guys play.
And the final question, your favorite song or artist that you listened to before a big game?
Before a big game, I normally have I listen to two songs. I listen to Meek Mills, and I listen to Betty Wright, No Pain, No Gain.
Okay, all right, and that gets you ready to go.
Oh, yes, sir, No Pain, No Gain.
No Pain, No Gain is definitely true, and that's been true for you throughout this whole process. And this has been a long, difficult process, but again, it's almost over. And then you got something else to deal with. You know, going on an NFL level is a whole different ball game now.
Uh-huh.
T.Y., it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck as you prepare for the draft. You're prepared at this point, but as the draft up, you know, as it comes up to us, and it's there, Thursday, NFL draft, and we'll see what happens, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. Let's do this again, and good luck to you, man.
All right, no problem. Thank you, and thanks for having me.
All right. T.Y. Hilton, as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft, which is just around the corner. It is upon us. It is here. It is coming a lot faster than, I mean, it's a long process. I mean, it's a long, long process, and it culminates on Thursday with Roger Goodell stepping to the podium and saying the magic words. And it's probably going to be Andrew Luck, number one, RG3, number three, and we'll see what happens from there. But it's probably going to be that in that particular order. I can guess those two. We'll see what happens moving forward. You know, because anything can happen. Anything can happen. Anything. I was impressed with T.Y. Hilton. I really was impressed with him. Your thoughts on T.Y. Hilton, Jeremy?
I think that you see the ilk. Again, here are these players. This is their job. Well, I like this comment of, you know, he put dad right in line and made it clear that this is, you know, at this point right now, it's the business. So, you know, he's gonna go with where the team drafts him, and he talks about the workouts and the effort. And I think that these players very quickly get to realize, you know, this is it's go time now. Especially a week away. We've heard it from enough of these players, and T.Y. was no different, that he knows, I think they're more grounded from today, and they realize that if you're not drafted, it doesn't mean it means getting into camp. Drafted is good. Getting into camp is what counts.
Yes, I mean, and ultimately making the team, and that's what ultimately counts. And we'll see what happens with some of these guys, and it should be very interesting where they go as the draft is approaching. We're going to bring in now a guy who is also preparing for this draft. He's a very humble man, seems to be a very good man. And we're going to bring in Colorado State running back, the one, the only, Raymond Carter. Raymond, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine. You? Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Nice to be here.
And Raymond, you had a big-time performance at your pro day in March. 25 reps at 225, 4.4740, 36-inch vertical. All the measurables are there for you. When that day was over, did you feel like, you know what, I just made it happen?
Oh, yeah, I felt comfortable in my day. Just knowing that the work that I put in those previous months before that, I went in there confident. You know, I just treated it as another day of training because I felt like when I was training, you know, with the group of guys I was training with and the trainers that got me ready for that day, I felt confident in where I was. So I just treated it as another day of training. I just went out there to perform.
And as you went through the process, as you went through the pro day, did you expect it to have that kind of day? You expected to do well on that pro day?
Yeah, I set a high goal for myself, you know, out there to go perform, you know, because, you know, going to the next level has always been a dream of mine. So, you know, I had to show up that day, you know, to open some eyes, and I think I did that.
And it seemed like after that pro day, there's been a lot of buzz about you, and that, like you said, you opened some eyes. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of buzz, you know, just hearing feedback, you know, just hearing from teams, my agent giving me feedback, you know, telling me what teams are saying, you know, it's just, you know, it's just a blessing, you know, just to hear, you know, what they feel about me and what that pro day did for me. And it really boosted my stock up, really, really up. And, you know, right now, you know, sitting as a late rounder, priority free agent right now. So, you know, just a blessing, you know, as far as, like, everything that I had to go through and just be here at this point of time right now and sitting where I am right now. It's just, you know, it's just a humble experience.
And you talked about at this point you may be a late-round draft pick or a priority free agent. I look at the priority free agent status for you as not a bad thing because in some respect you can kind of and possibly may be in a position where you can pick and choose where you want to go. Are you looking at it that way?
Oh, yeah. You know, just talking to my dad about that, you know, everybody dream is to get drafted. You know, if that happens, I'll be happy wherever I go. At the same time, if I can pick and choose to go wherever, where I can fit in good and get the best opportunity to showcase, you know, to earn a roster spot, you know, I'm willing to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm just trying to make a team and just showcase my skills, you know, to help a team any way I can, you know. Either on offense, special teams, or whatever, I'm willing to do everything.
We're talking to former Colorado State running back Raymond Carter as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft, which is a few days away. Raymond, I look at you. I mean, you missed the better part of 2 years. You had the ACL injury. You had to transfer from UCLA. In a lot of ways, I look at this whole situation for you as kind of a blessing in disguise because a running back – only has so many carries in his body. Are you kind of looking at it that way?
Yeah, you know, with all the injuries that happen, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have no control over that. Stuff happens like that all the time. But, you know, I came a long way as far as, you know, my ACL injury. I went through the 9 months rehab process, and it really helped well. You know, everything's feel fine. I'm perfectly healthy. And, you know, with playing running back, you take a lot of beatings, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I feel, you know, that's just a part of the job, you know what I'm saying? You know, that comes, you know, with the running backs. You got to be able to take that and take a load and, you know, take those hits, you know what I'm saying? It's part of our nature. And so it's something you get used to after a time, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's really nothing because, you know, it comes with it at the end of the day.
And, Raymond, I mean, the whole draft process, preparing, getting your body right, getting yourself right mentally, it has to be a grind. It has to be a tough thing for a player. Take us through the day in the life of Raymond Carter as he prepared for the NFL draft.
Well, you know, after pro day, I went straight back to training. I've been training 4 days a week, you know, just training every day, you know, doing conditioning, doing more football work, then just hitting the weight room, you know, just kind of keep getting stronger and keeping my feet fast. You know, that's the main thing. You know, I'm just at it every day, you know, on the constant grind. But I mean, other than that, you know, I'm just chilling at home, just hanging around with family and friends, you know, just doing stuff like that, you know, just trying to, you know, stay grounded, you know what I'm saying, you know, stay out of trouble out here and just, you know, just wait for the next step.
And have you visited any facilities during this time, any team facilities?
Oh, I haven't, but I haven't visited any teams, but I recently just talked to the Broncos 3 days ago. They gave me a call 3 days ago, and I had a conversation with them. And, you know, they think highly of me, and it was just a good hearing from them, you know, because I mean, this draft process is a slow process. You know, you have no control of what happens, and, you know, it's just good that, you know, here from the Broncos that, you know, they're actually interested in me, and I'm on their draft board, and it's good hearing that, you know, that, you know, I mean, somebody's here, so
right.
It's good, yeah.
And Raymond, on the show, we like to play a game called Getting to Know You. You want to get to know you better as you get ready and as you prepare for the upcoming NFL draft. You ready to play?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
Raymond Carter, your favorite football player growing up?
I grew up watching a lot of running backs. Some of my favorites, Terrell Davis, Eddie George, LT. I pretty much paid attention a lot to them. They were pretty much doing it back in the day. So,
your favorite food growing up, or your favorite food now?
I'm a soul food person, you know what I'm saying? But okay. I like mac and cheese a lot. I eat that a lot.
And there's nothing wrong with macaroni and cheese. But, again, you probably had to push that aside a little bit for right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to watch my weight. So.
Your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? Oh, man, that's a tough one because I watch movies all the time. You know, I'm always at the movies watching something new. So, my favorite movie would be I like Higher Learning.
Okay.
Omar Epps and Tyra Banks. It's a good movie.
That was a good movie. That was a very good movie. And the final question, a song or artist that Raymond Carter listens to before a big game?
Before a big game? Well, usually before big games, I like to stay calm. You know what I'm saying? I don't like to get overhyped. You know what I'm saying? You know, that makes me overthink stuff. So I listen to pretty much R&B before games.
Okay.
You know, to keep me relaxed. You know what I'm saying? That's what I do. So that's just a little tradition of mine. Nobody specific. I just, you know, just throwing my R&B session and just have it on shuffle and just let it play.
I got to ask this question. I mean, I saw the 25 reps of 225 on your pro day. Like I said before, the 4.4740, 36-inch vertical. What song did you listen to before your pro day?
What song did I listen to? I think it was, I can't remember right now,
okay,
to be honest with you.
I need to know because, I mean, 25 times, I mean, I need motivation.
I mean,
maybe I could do it if I listen to that song.
I actually hit it 26 times to be more direct about that.
26,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually hit it 26 times. But, I can't remember, honestly, but I don't think it was, like, too much hardcore music going on because,
okay,
like I said, I like to stay relaxed, you know what I'm saying, because I don't like myself getting overhyped, you know what I'm
right.
saying? So I just try to stay relaxed. You know, I feel confident going during that bench, you know. I mean, starting from where I was, like, the first day assessment test and workouts, I started off at 12.
Right.
Just seeing improvement to get all the way to 26. I felt confident in going in there doing that bench. So, I mean, I just felt like, you know, the music I was listening to got me ready for that because I was ready. I was ready regardless, you know what I'm saying, to hit that. So,
it was the cherry on the top. How about that?
Yeah. and
if you remember the song, I need it because, again, maybe I can do what you did on that day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not 25 reps, it's 26 reps of 225 on your pro day. Let's clear it up.
Yeah.
Let's put it out there.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely let you know that. I'm going to go through my playlist and see if I remember. So, I'll let you know.
All right. Let me know. And, Raymond, I see you're on Twitter. Where can fans connect with you on Twitter?
You said, say that again?
I said, where can fans connect with you on Twitter? I know you have a Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I'm always on Twitter. I'm constantly tweeting. I won't say I'm addicted to it, but I'm on Twitter at HumbleMan_Ray. So that's HumbleMan_RAY, and that's where you can find me.
And why HumbleMan?
Well, just how I was raised, you know, my mom and dad always, you know, preached to me to always stay humble, you know, just growing up, you know what I'm saying, with the, all the accomplishments I had, you know, coming out of high school, going to college and stuff like that, you know, they always wanted me to stay grounded, and they always, they instilled that in me, you know, just growing up, and, you know, that's just how I treat everything, you know, just staying humble because, I mean, you can't take anything for granted because anything can happen, so you just got to stay humble and just be thankful and grateful for everything that's in front of me and everything that's happened to me. So cause at the end of the day, you know, it can all go away. So you just got to enjoy every thing about it, you know, just stay grounded about it.
Raymond, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck on the next level. If you know, if you don't get drafted, you're at least going to be in some on somebody's team in somebody's camp. So we wish you nothing but the best of luck. And let's do this again.
Oh, yeah, anytime. I appreciate this interview a lot, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, you too.
Raymond Carter, former running back, Colorado State University, as he prepares and gets ready for the upcoming NFL draft. Right around the corner. It is here. It is upon us. The draft is here. I mean, everybody's story's different. I mean, you know, just talking to the four guys here, T.Y. Hilton, Raymond Carter, Ja'Cory Harris, Antoine Blake, everybody's story is different. T.Y. Hilton more than likely is going to be drafted. It's just a matter of what round. Raymond Carter, different situation. He may have to go to free agency route or maybe he's a seventh-round pick. Ja'Cory Harris, same situation. Antoine Blake, in a lot of ways, similar situations. But again, everybody's story is different, but everybody, the one thing, the common thing that comes out of all these things is the hard work that they have to put in, the dedication that they have in order to get to the next level, in order to be successful on the next level. There's a lot of work there. It's a grind. It seems like it's the ultimate grind, and again, They're dissected like no other. I mean, you're dissected to the point where, you know, all the questions you're asked, all the measurables, and like we talked about, the Wonderlic test and so on and so forth. It's got to be difficult for players during this process. Got to be a difficult thing. Got to be.
Well, that's where, you know, and Paul, we go back and forth all the time. That's where, you know, like you said, this becomes the business of football. I mean, you've talked about the grind. I mean, this is a four to six month interview process essentially for these players, and that's a long time to be evaluated in anyone's mind because one, you know, and then at the end of the day, there's only so many draft picks. I don't think people realize, you know, the amount of stress that these athletes and the college students put themselves under just for the theoretical chance of then just being drafted. I mean, unless you're in the first three rounds, you know, the rest of this is kind of irrelevant because you're still going into camp to reprove yourself.
Right. And you look at it, and that's a great point. You look at that situation, first round, second round, third round pick, even maybe a fourth or fifth, probably is not going to get cut. Well, I would say past the fourth round, there's no guarantees. Past the fourth round, you still have an opportunity to get cut. First, second, third, fourth round, you're not going to get cut. So that's a great point because you have to, in a lot of ways, prove yourself again and again and again. And in the NFL, you're going to keep proving, having to prove yourself, improve yourself, and prove yourself year in, year out, day in and day out. It's just the nature of the beast. Definitely the nature of the beast and the nature of T.Y. Hilton's situation, the nature of Raymond Carter's situation, the nature of Ja'Cory Harris's situation, and the nature of Antoine Blake's situation. It's just, it is what it is. But we'll see. And it's got to, I mean, this is something you want to do for the rest of your life, theoretically. But not everybody can do it. There's only so many jobs. There's only so many jobs out there. There's only so many jobs out there.
Well, and the other big piece is, Paul, and you know, this, most of these guys right here, and you say you want to do this for the rest of your life, They some of them 3-4 years have done this at a major level at a college, and they owe it to themselves, if nothing else, to spend 6 months, even a year, if they're not drafted, you know, keeping themselves in shape and trying to get latched onto a team via free agency, because you only need one team to believe in you. If you're going to make it in the pros, and certainly, it's well documented, you don't have to be a number one or even a fourth round draft pick to have a very good.
You don't even have to be drafted.
Career.
You don't even have to be drafted. You know. So
I think it's the draft is I think the NFL has done a great job of making it. It is a humongous marketing tool. But aside from that, you know, it certainly gets a lot of these players the first real glimpse at what exactly they're dealing with when you look at the NFL. And that is, I mean, it is a multi-billion-dollar business, period.
True story. I mean, it's just true story. I mean, and they did a great job putting it in prime time now. I mean, that was the smartest move they could do, putting this thing in prime time and extending it in a lot of ways. So it's must-see TV for a lot of people. And the NFL is, in a lot of ways, must-see TV as well. So anything the NFL does, in a lot of ways, they're like King Midas. Anything they touch, it turns to gold. Gold and green. And that green is money. I mean, the NFL is doing their thing on that in terms of that. And I want to, speaking of the NFL, John Mara, New York Giants owner, talked about the possibility at some point that kickoffs would be eliminated from the game of football. Kickoffs would be eliminated. He can see a future where kickoffs will be eliminated. And the thing about it is player safety. And it's all in the name of player safety. And I look at this and I say, you know what? The kickoff, see, here's the thing with the NFL. They're doing all they can do, and they're doing some great things and trying to clean up the game, trying to make the game as safe as possible. But the thing is, you start tinkering with things and taking things out, you're going to mess up your situation. And the NFL is at the top. They're at the top. It's the NFL number one and the next league at three, four, and five. So it's like, you know, the NFL, you don't want to keep tinkering and messing up and playing with the game. The kickoff is one of the more exciting plays in football. That coast-to-coast thing, going from your end zone to the other team's end zone, that's beautiful. That's an exciting play. And I know it can be dangerous on some level, but I guess in terms of special teams and guys running down the field full speed. But football is a contact sport. It's, you're not necessarily out there to hurt people, but you're out there to inflict pain. This is the hurt business. It's a contact sport. In order for you to be successful, you have to make contact if you're defense with the other team. It's a contact sport. There's only so many things you can do to keep players safe. It's only so many things you can do. You can't take out the kickoff. It's just, you got the onside kick thing, another exciting play. I mean, you got all these different things. You cannot take out the kickoff. You can't take that out. I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. I mean, you never know. Did you ever think that horse collar tackles would be outlawed? Did you ever think that would be the case? I mean, I never saw that coming. I mean, so you just never know what may happen. You just never know. Let's bring in a guy who, 11-time Pro Bowler, newest Hall of Fame inductee, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. My cousin Shana got me over here working out at Lifetime Fitness in Alpharetta. I was a little tired this morning, but I came. I'm going to the Ultimate Fight tonight.
Okay, okay.
There you go.
That should be a good fight.
You don't have this fight. But you're right, Paul. You can't take out, if you take out the kickoff, you take out a big play part of football. It gets the crowd into it. It gets the fans into it.
Right.
I mean, it changes the momentum of a whole bunch of games. So if you take that out, you're taking out a big part of football.
And I don't think they should tinker with at all, and I hope they don't. But I don't think they will, but we'll see. You never know. And Willie, Donovan McNabb came out this week, and Donovan's doing a lot of talking. And I want to defend him for a second here before I ask Willie the question, but a lot of people have criticized Donovan over the years for not sticking up for himself, not being outspoken, so on and so forth. And now when he's out here pushing himself and saying, you know what, I am a Hall of Famer. I did have a Hall of Fame career. We're criticizing him again. But Willie, looking at Donovan, is he a Hall of Fame quarterback?
Give me a few of his numbers, Paul. His Pro Bowls and his total stats.
6 Pro Bowls, 37,000 passing yards, 5 NFC title appearances. I got to get some.
Any NFC player of the year awards? Any All Pros?
No MVPs, All Pros, things of that caliber, things of that nature, I should say. But, I mean, the numbers.
I think he's a body of work. I think he's borderline Hall of Famer. If he had won a Super Bowl, I would say he would be a shoe-in Hall of Famer. But he did get to the NFC title game a whole bunch of times, and did get to one Super Bowl. You know, maybe he didn't play particularly well in that game. If he won a Super Bowl, I would say he would be probably a Hall of Famer. You know. After a few ballots, but he didn't win a Super Bowl, and you know, sometimes the way he walked away the last 2 years are going to hurt him getting in the Hall of Fame.
And that's why I agree with you. I think if he would have had these last 2 years where possibly his team went to the playoffs and he put up some decent numbers, I think he would be a Hall of Famer. But I think the way it ended in Minnesota, the way it ended in Washington, and it looks like at this point, I don't think anybody really wants him, so it looks like his career could be over. It's going to be close, but I have to say no. I think in a lot of ways he becomes a poor man.
If he's a guy that gets in on the veterans committee, maybe he's a guy that has to wait a while, maybe he gets in down the road. I mean, Donovan McNabb was a hell of a football player. He was a class act. But I don't think you need to start promoting yourself as far as the Hall of Famer, like you said. I mean, look at Richmond Webb. Richmond Webb protected Dan Marino all those years, was an all-decade player, went to 7 Pro Bowls, but he hadn't made it to the finals list yet. The tackle that I played in the Pro Bowl he's with the AFC the whole time. I think the fact that I got a chance to go to another team in another conference and went to 4 more Pro Bowls and all small pros helped get me in early on the ballot, but like you said, the fact that he left Philly and didn't do a lot after he left Philly is going to hurt him for a while.
And I'd say, I mean, he had a nice run definitely in Philly. He really had a great run in Philadelphia, again, the 6 Pro Bowls and the five title games. Go ahead.
Paul, when you put up his 37,000 yards, are there any quarterbacks in the Hall other than like from the 50s and 60s, modern day, that have gotten in with 37,000 yards?
That I would have to check. I'd have to double check on that one. But his numbers are better than Jim Kelly, are better than Troy Aikman. But I look at those guys, and to me, Donovan becomes a poor man's Jim Kelly because Jim Kelly got to the Super Bowl.
You can't compare either one of those guys to Troy Aikman.
No, not at all. I mean. But Troy Aikman, because of the offense that they ran in Dallas, I mean, they didn't throw the ball as much as other teams did, especially with the run game that they had in Dallas. So Troy Aikman, in a lot of ways, because of all the Super Bowls that he won, he's a definite Hall of Famer. And I think Jim Kelly's a Hall of Famer. I mean, 4 Super Bowl appearances, you can't really – I mean, that's – you're there. You're there. I mean, Donovan 5 times NFC title game, but only 1 Super Bowl appearance. Both him and Jim Kelly haven't won it. So I think, you know, in a lot of ways you can compare him from that standpoint. But
what about their quarterback percentage? How do you compare his quarterback rating percentage compared to theirs over their career?
Well, you look at Donovan. Let's look at his QB rating over the years. You look at him. Jeremy, you chime in. I'll go look for that.
Well, I mean, I wanted to finally. I mean, Will, I'll say this. I mean, I totally agree with what you said. The fact is, he didn't win the Super Bowl, and you know better than anybody. If you're not especially at a quarterback position, if you're not a winner in this league, the numbers that you have to put up. I mean, I think you have to be a damn winner. He's not. a Dan Marino type guy. And part of the reason is because Marino, McNabb, when he got traded, really, like you just said, I totally agree with what your assessment was. He hurt himself because, unfortunately, I guess Andy Reid was right. I mean, I guess Andy Reid knew that Donovan's best days were way behind him because he has fallen flat on his face in Washington and in Minnesota. And I think it's unfortunate, but I guess a player of his mold, when you lose the speed and the legs, you go away. His numbers are great. I mean, he's a great quarterback, arguably the greatest quarterback the Eagles ever had. Greater than Jaworski, I think there's no question there because they both went to Super Bowls. And the predominant argument is he's better than Randall, and I think the numbers prove he's way better than Randall, but he's not a Hall of Fame. He's a quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he is the best quarterback of the Eagles by far. And another thing that's going to hurt him too, the Hall of Fame is trying to get more defensive guys in there and more unsung guys like all the linemen that got in this year. So the fact that he didn't win a Super Bowl, the fact that he didn't, he got to those AFC titles, the NFC championship games, but, Jim Kelly got the four Super Bowls. And, like you said, Donovan had an excellent career. And another knack on him was, his durability. At some points he got healthy. He was injured a lot. And they talked about how hard he worked in the offseason. Well, I would think if you worked hard in the offseason, it would translate into you, staying healthier during the course of the year. But toward the end, his last year or two in Philly and his last couple years, he just seemed like he wasn't, he didn't look like he was in the best shape on the field. I will say that.
And you look at it, I mean, there has been talk in Minnesota and even in Washington about his work habits. And so, I mean, that could hurt him also in terms of the Hall of Fame. And, Willie, I have the numbers that you were looking for. Troy Aikman's highest quarterback rating was in 1993, where he was at 99. Jim Kelly's highest rating was back in 1990, where he was 101.2. And Donovan's highest rating, which was back in 2004, was 104.7.
Well,
on average,
that is pretty good.
On average
of their career?
On average, Donovan, 85.6, Jim Kelly, 84.4, and Troy Aikman, 81.6.
Well, I would have to say he's in the only thing difference between Donovan and him is that Jim Kelly played in four Super Bowls. He didn't win any. And the Troy Aikman, he played on an offense that was dominated by Emmitt Smith, catching the ball out the backfield and the screen pass and running the ball, and he had some great receivers, and when you look at it, and if you think about it, Donovan, did he have other than Terrell Owens, did he have some really really star receivers?
No, I would give you that. He didn't.
He
didn't. He didn't. I mean, the only year you can argue that he had was near the end of his time in Philly, where they started to get Jackson and Macklin, but earlier in his career, you were talking about the likes of Charles Johnson, the likes of Torrence Small, Freddie Mitchell, I mean, James Thrash, Todd Pinkston. I mean,
y'all got Torrence Small for months, and he was our second, third receiver. So with the talent around him, he was an excellent quarterback. I mean, I would say he is by far the best quarterback in Philly history. For his body of work, but I think he is borderline Hall of Fame. It's just going to come down to when the writers will put him in, if they put him in, and whether, the way he ended his career and the way he's talking now is going to affect him. Because I'm going to tell you something, guys, you got the same guys voting every year. And if some of them don't like a guy and he doesn't get that percentage, he's just not going to get in.
Right. And I mean, but don't you think in some respect, Willie, at this point, I mean, is it kind of a contradiction? Is it unfair? I know a lot of people criticized him, for coming out and saying that he thinks he is a Hall of Famer. Is it almost hypocritical because people have criticized him for not standing up for himself? Now he's standing up for himself and we're criticizing him again.
Well, yeah, I wish he would have stood up for himself some more when he was playing, and he did take some criticism from some guys on both sides, wrestling ball and, you know, and then everybody had to come to his defense. But, you know, in Washington, things didn't work out. So we thought it was a system and he couldn't make audibles and stuff. And then when he got to Minnesota, we just saw that, you know, he didn't have the velocity with his arm anymore. And he just wasn't the same player. So, I mean, he knows that. I mean, the last couple years in Philly, you know, he was starting to get worn down some. And that's what I was saying when you were gone, Paul. For a guy that you would have thought would have worked hard all season, you know, you would think that you would be stronger when you get those aches and pains during the season,
right.
But it didn't look like it transferred over.
And, Willie, this past week we had Detroit Lions center Dominic Riola come out and say that short-term memory loss in some respect is a part of playing in the NFL. He is quoted as saying, "I think when you sign up for this job, you know what you're getting into." And this is you got a lot of players now coming out and suing the league and suing, I believe, Rydell as well because of some of the concussions they suffered and some of the things that they've dealt with in terms of injuries. Looking at the whole situation, is short-term memory loss and some of those things, is that a part of playing football?
You know, in some situations, you know, it could be. I think it probably was more for the guys in the earlier years. I think a lot of guys have had some type of short-term memory. I think with the way they're trying to handle things now, you know, with the concussion situation and really going a hard line on that, I think it can help lower that. But the way football was before, you know, if you have something wrong with you, you got to get back out there and play football. So they're trying to change it now and make it better for guys where they are making sure that if they do have a concussion, they're not out there damaging themselves anymore. But I think in the past, it probably was a part of it.
And I almost look at it this way. I mean, if you're a trash man, guess what? You're going to be dirty and smelly by the end of the day. I mean, so it just comes with the job. I think it comes with the job. You know, football is a physical game. And some of those things come with the job.
What should guys be compensated for then? That's what they're saying. If they're going to have short-term memory then, when they do retire from football, it's going to be hard, you know, to work a job and do certain things, you know, for your lifestyle. So what these guys are saying then, they need to be taken care of. So, I mean, it's kind of a tough argument on either side of the book if you want to argue that because guys, you know, and then the commissioner's in a tough spot because, you know, then you have the Greg Williams talking about aim for the head and the head goes, the body will follow. You know, so, you know, you put the commissioner in a tough spot because now he's dealing with all these lawsuits. And the problem is this, if you go and say you're going to pay an X, Y, Z guy, then the other guys are going to come and say they want some too. So, I mean, that's what they're dealing with.
Right, and it's tough. Like you said, it's a tough argument here because on one hand, you know what you're getting into. Football is the hurt business. It's a physical game. And then on the other hand, should they be taken care of because of the physicality of the game? It's tough. It's really tough.
And we got to understand this too, Paul. Like a lot of guys have been playing football for their, like me, 10 years old, Jeremy. I mean, so this memory loss just didn't start in the NFL. You know, it could have started in high school, junior high, college. I mean, you had to play football. A lot of guys have been playing since high school or college or whatever. So we don't know the concussions and a lot of guys, what they've been dealing with in college. So, you know, in college it's not going to be as scrutinized in the NFL about putting you back in the game with concussions. We're not even talking about what their system is of how they have dealt with it. So these guys have been, probably a lot of these guys playing football have been getting concussions since they were little kids. So you got to factor that into it too.
And that's a great point. At that point, the argument becomes who's liable and how can you truly prove, like you said, that the concussion issues happened because of playing NFL football. It could have happened in college. Could have happened in high school, like you're saying. I mean, that's a great point. So it's difficult. It's not a cut-and-dry situation here. Not at all. We're talking 11-time Pro Bowler Willie Rolfe, newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, newest inductee to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Willie, Dwight Howard, switching gears to the NBA, Dwight Howard out for the year, herniated disc in his back, got the surgery, he's done for the year. Well, what's your thoughts on this whole thing?
Okay, if he's been playing this whole year, I'm sure that herniated disc didn't start early. You know, when did it start? Is it just not getting this bad? It's kind of ironic to me as soon as the coach doesn't leave and they don't get rid of the coach and all this stuff comes out, now his back gets hurt. I just think Dwight Howard, you know, when he first came in the league and from Atlanta and everything, I liked Dwight Howard, and he always smiled and stuff. But now it's just like, you know, he's always laughing and on the bench. He's, you know, he's really hurt his image of a basketball player. And until, you know, Shaquille O'Neal did acting and stuff like that, but Shaquille O'Neal was a basketball player on that note, and he played hard. So, you know, his whole career. But until Dwight wins a ring or something, he's always going to be labeled as the guy that came out, he called his coach out, and when he called his coach out, he shut it down on his team and his teammates, you know, when it came crunch time. So, as far as what he is as an athlete, I've lost respect for him, you know, the way he's handled himself and handled this situation.
And he apparently had these back problems back in March, but we're 20 days into April. So he had these back problems apparently in March. He was complaining of back issues. I mean, you wonder. I mean,
do you think if they fired Stan Van Gundy, you know, back in March, did he still play or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. You wonder about that. I mean,
I think to say that Dwight Howard doesn't want to, I mean, just gave it up, I'll say this. Even though I'm the biggest pessimist in the world, I think, honestly, when you look at a player like these players today, you're not looking at these athletes today. Very few, it's such a business, Will. They're not from your generation. They are, when a doctor tells them that they're injured, it's their agents, it's their family members getting in their ears saying, listen, you don't want to mess up what you have in this league because of this year or this chance. Shut it down, do what you need to do, and who cares about your championship, because you don't need to get your insurance payout, you need to get your guaranteed contract fulfilled. It's that simple.
Well, even last, the dunk contest last year, the guy was talking about his publicist and all this. But the bottom line is, you're there to play basketball. You think Magic Johnson, I can't compare him to them. Remember Scottie Pippen? Scottie Pippen played with a bad back when they played Utah back when he was playing, and he was barely able to go up and down the court, and he sacrificed his body. When he left Chicago, he had to have back surgery. He wasn't the same player after he left Chicago, but I remember Scottie Pippen playing in those finals, and his back was killing him, and he played through it. So that's all I'm saying is, you're right. The way these guys are now is different. Because I'm telling you, Magic Johnson or Kareem or a lot of these guys would have played through that.
Well, I will say in his defense, I mean, both the team doctor and the doctor in Los Angeles said that surgery was necessary. So in his defense.
Could he have had surgery after the playoffs? Could he have played? You know, it would have been painful, but would it have hurt him? Because why don't you look this up next time, Paul? What did Scottie Pippen have when he was playing and he had that back surgery? I remember that. Before he went to Houston or after those playoffs that last year when they were playing against Utah, something was wrong with his back. And he had
his back was bad. His back definitely was bad. But and also, to defend Dwight Howard, the last game that he played was against the 76ers. I watched the game. He was noticeably in pain, and he didn't seem like the same Dwight Howard. I think in that game he still had 20-20, but he didn't seem like Dwight Howard.
If we can go out there and get 20-20 with a bad back, if the coach cuts down his minutes, can he help the team? And can he still play through the pain? If he's tough enough to play through the pain, I don't think that injury can get any worse than what it was going to be. I don't know if it can, but I'm saying it's just ironic the way. Another thing too, Paul. We can't, when the team's getting whooped and you're sitting over there in the suit on the sideline and you're laughing and giggling. Come on, Paul. You can't do that.
No, you can't do that. I definitely agree with that.
But Willie, I'm gonna tell you again. You're dealing in a different generation. Like I mean, you got to I know this is sad to say, but I mean, the respect level of these players to me is they're not athletes anymore. They're borderline performers because when you look, are there in every sport, in each of these sports, like Peyton Manning, that guy clearly is an athlete. Yes, money's important to him, but he, like we were saying for weeks and months, should have stepped away from the game. But this guy is so competitive, just like Brett Favre, they have to play. I mean, I think when you look at it, when you look in the NBA, the only other guy like that you see potentially is Kobe Bryant. Here's a guy that's winning, consistently winning, has really nothing to play for, especially this year. They're certainly not going to be a championship contender, and he is trying his darndest to make this team win. And I think for these players, these younger players, it really for them is much more about the image. It's much more about what the Twitter, the reality TV show that they can pick up, the branding of their name, than it is what they do in the field of play that they play in.
And I would agree with you. I think Kobe Bryant is the last of that breed. It's a dying breed of a guy that's just competitive. And I know Kobe missing all these games with his shins, he's really hurt. If Kobe wasn't hurt, he would be back. And you're right, Kobe's played through a lot of injuries and played hurt. But you're right, it's just a different day and era. But I think you're going to have some guys that come through that are like that still, that it's really about the game and the money and all that stuff comes secondary. Because the bottom line is this. When you walk away from that game, you want to make sure you walked away from that game and you left every ounce on that field or that basketball court, and you want to be respected by your peers and by everybody. When you walk away and they say, look, this guy was out here busting his butt, and he gave everything he had to the game. And when he walked away, he knew he couldn't give it to the game anymore. So that's where you want to leave. You don't want, so to me, regardless of where we are now with Dwight Howard, he's got to come back whenever he comes back and wherever he plays. And he's got to be a beast and for the second half of his career and get some rings or do something to make up for the tarnished reputation or whatever the scar on him right now. Because, his attitude and way he's held it has not been good.
I want to defend Dwight Howard from this standpoint. A lot of times we look at people on a bench or we look at people in various places and we say, okay, this is the way you should handle this. This is the way you should react. This is the way you should, when you're on the bench, this is the way you should be. And everybody is different, and everybody expresses emotion differently. I mean, we look at the Rob Gronkowski thing where we criticize, a lot of people criticize, I didn't criticize him, I didn't think, it is what it is. He played his heart out, he lost, but at the end of the day, he was dancing and had a good time. The way I look at it is this. You look at it, everybody is different. Everybody deals with defeat. Everybody deals with all these things differently. I think we get in a dangerous situation when we start criticizing people for the way they, for some of the things that they do in terms of their facial expressions, in terms of whether they're smiling or not smiling, and you should smile here or smile there. Go ahead.
Have you ever seen the White House series? Now, that was a knock on LeBron James. He wasn't serious. LeBron James is not
right.
Smiling and giggling all the time on that basketball court anymore. He did a lot more when he was in Cleveland, all that dancing around, all that nonsense they were doing in Cleveland. Have you ever seen Dwight Howard serious, though, on the basketball court, really and truly? Have you seen him act serious?
But Willie, you look at his numbers, you look at the things he's done. He has been to an NBA Finals. It's not like he hasn't won playoff series. I mean, he's won some playoff series and made it all the way to the finals. I mean,
another thing, another thing with LeBron, he's too tired to do all that bullcrap. Do you see Kobe LeBron ain't doing all that bullcrap anymore? No, because when you come off that basketball court, you're going to be icing your knees and sitting down resting and making sure you're doing everything to take care of your body. LeBron James ain't playing around no more like he was in Cleveland because he's got to grow up and mature. Well, Dwight Howard's got to do some, you would agree with this, Paul, Dwight Howard has to do some maturing, correct?
I would agree with that because the way he handled that Stan Van Gundy thing, and I mean, I was very critical of how he had his arm around him, and you know you want this guy fired, you talked about this guy, and you got your arm around him laughing and stuff. I mean, that's not really funny, especially when you're dealing with a person's money and a person's job. So you're right. He does need to grow up. I agree with that. He does truly need to grow up. I would agree with that. All in all, he does need to grow up. I don't think there's an argument there. He truly does need to grow up. And looking at it now, Willie, the NBA playoffs are a week away. I mean, the Western Conference is still not finalized. The East, I look at the East, I say there's only two teams to me that can win in, that's Chicago or Miami. Out West, I named six teams that could get to the NBA Finals. Memphis, Dallas, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Spurs, and Oklahoma City.
Six teams.
Yeah. That can make it to the NBA Finals. It's the NBA playoffs are going to be very exciting.
Well, and another thing I think too, I think that the playoffs are going to be so competitive in the West that the team in the East is going to be more rested when they get to the finals because it's going to be smart basketball. I think that's part of the reason Miami, when they played Dallas last year, Dallas had a hell of a squad and they got to the Western Conference to the championship easier. But I think Miami, part of the reason they were tired last year because they played a real tough series with Chicago and a real tough series with Boston to get to the finals. And I think Dallas, what they won four, they were beating teams easily, handily last year. So
yeah.
I think it's other than Oklahoma City, I think it's going to be real tough in the West. And if Derrick Rose is not there, I don't think Boston may surprise you. Though I think Boston is going to be more competitive. I think Boston could get to the final too. I think Boston was playing good. They look a little tired now, but I still think it's Miami that can win. That's going to get through the East because if Derrick Rose is not there, they just don't have enough to beat the Heat. I mean, the Heat beat them without Bosh the other day, and LeBron James has played just exceptional this year because we know Dwayne Wade is going to miss 20 games, and when LeBron James has carried that team and has only missed one game all year, so I still think it's the Heat. And I think it's the Heat's year to win the championship because whoever they're going to have to play in the West is going to have a much harder road to get to the finals than the Miami Heat will have.
So you're basically saying that the West is going to beat themselves up. Whoever comes out of the West is going to be so beat up that they're not going to be able to beat Miami or Chicago or whoever else comes out of the East.
I don't think so. I don't think they'll be able to beat them in a seven-game series, no.
And I look at the Chicago Bulls, interesting team, especially with Derrick Rose, and I'm a lifelong Philadelphia 76ers fan. I'm rooting hard for the Sixers to get that eighth spot or whatever spot it takes to play the Chicago Bulls. I'm rooting hard because with Derrick Rose, his uncertainty, all the injuries he suffered this year, we got a shot. I mean, the Sixers have a shot. I'm not saying they could beat the Bulls. I'm not saying they would beat the Bulls even without Derrick Rose because the Bulls are a fairly decent team and have played well even without Derrick Rose. So I'm not even saying the Sixers could beat the Bulls without Derrick Rose. But what I'm saying is the Sixers could at least be more competitive against the Bulls than the Miami Heat. So as a Sixers fan, I'm hoping that we can get the Chicago Bulls. But you look at it, you look at the Eastern Conference, you talked about Boston. I mean, they're battle tested.
And another team that's a sleeper team in the Eastern Conference Finals. In the Eastern Conference, they have a lot of experience that's going to give somebody a lot of fit. Is the Indiana Pacers? The Indiana Pacers have played some excellent basketball of late, and they're deep. I mean, they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent, and they got some guys coming off the bench. So I like the Pacers too. The Pacers are going to be Boston, but the Pacers are. I have a real tough team, and they got some length on that team.
They definitely do. A lot of. I talked about the Pacers at the beginning of the season. I thought that was a team that was going to surprise some people, and they have. I mean, they have a nice combination of veterans and young talent, and I really think they're going to give some teams some problems. I would agree with that, and I think now with Dwight Howard being out, the Pacers are slated to play the Orlando Magic in the playoffs. You know at least they're going to get out of the first round, but I will tell you this. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. That's going to be a hard-fought series against the Orlando Magic. They're not going to roll over. But we'll see what happens. Willie, you're in Atlanta tonight. You're getting ready for the big UFC fight. Who do you have winning tonight?
I haven't really been – you know, I'm not a big UFC guy. But I will say it's a rematch between the guy that took the belt from Evans. And I'm going with the guy I watched him fight. I forget his name, but the one he took the belt from. I think he's going to take his belt back tonight.
Well, and we shall see, Willie. I'm not a big UFC guy myself. You're making all these fights. You going to Mayweather Cotto May 5th?
No, I'm not going to go to Mayweather Cotto. My cousin, my birthday was on the 18th, and he invited me up here and got the tickets. So, you know, anytime somebody's going to get me a ticket, I'm going to go. I've never been to a UFC fight. So I'm looking forward to it, and like I said, they stay out more as well. So I'm having a good time, and then I'll be going back to the draft to pick for the Saints again this year, next week. So I'm going back to New York again this week. But I'm looking forward to going to the fight. And Atlanta's a great city, and you know, you down south, you got a lot of nice people. and you know, and that's big, but everybody kind of knows everybody. So I'm looking forward to going and seeing some guys I haven't seen for a while. I saw Jerome Bennett last night. I saw Henry Crockett, who played linebacker, and Ward Gunn was out last night at this place called Twitch. So I'm looking forward to seeing some guys. You know, we had a lot of battles back between New Orleans and the Saints when I played there. So I'm looking forward to seeing some athletes and some guys that I haven't seen in a while, and hopefully it'll be a good match. But like you said, I'm more of a boxing fan, more of a UFC fan.
And you will be in New York next week. Maybe we could all catch up there in New York City.
Maybe we can.
We're a couple hours away. How long are you staying?
I'll be there Tuesday to Sunday.
Tuesday to Sunday, okay. So maybe we can come up there maybe Saturday. We'll see.
Okay, that's a plan. We can do that.
Willie, it was a pleasure talking to you. Wish you nothing but the best of luck. And enjoy the fight tonight.
All right, thank you. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We want to thank all the draft prospects that we had today. T.Y. Hilton, Florida International University. Raymond Carter, Colorado State University. Ja'Cory Harris, University of Miami. And also the one, the only, Antoine Blake of UTEP. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/PKN, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. For everybody here at GoFor, Jeremy Espy, and everybody, the entire staff, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. We hope you have the greatest week known to man, and we hope to see you back here next weekend. See you later. Take care. Bye.